Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
He inspires small business.
We can teach these barbarians a lesson in Western methods and efficiency that will put them to shame.
He tells it like it is.
I realize how difficult it's going to be in this godforsaken place where you can't find what you need. But there's the challenge.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
Welcome back. It's 34 After. Thanks very much for staying with me. Thanks for being part of my day. My pleasure to continue to be with you. You're going to be glad you're hanging out with me because we got a new friend on the show. John O'Hara is with us right now, ladies and gentlemen. John is Vice President of External Affairs with the Illinois Policy Institute. But that's a fairly new assignment for him. What he's been doing in the most recent past, though, is helping to organize the American Tea Parties. Yeah, those things. In fact, it's my understanding he was part of the very first one that was staged in Washington, D.C. about a year ago. And he's written a book called A New American Tea Party, The Counter-Revolution Against Bailouts, Handouts, Reckless Spending, and More Taxes. He's our new friend, John O'Hara. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Jim. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you here. John, for a while now, for a few years now, when I look at the Republican Party and the Democrat Party, all I see is dysfunction. One of the things we learned for sure in the Bush administration was which party is the big spending party, and it's the one that's in control. It doesn't matter whether the Republicans or the Democrats. President Bush didn't veto a single bill for the first 7 years of his presidency. That's preposterous, as far as I'm concerned.
You're exactly right, and it's one of the first things I tackle in the book.
Yeah.
is sort of the recent history before President Obama to really hammer home the fact that a lot of this stuff, including the bailouts, started under President Bush.
There's no question about it. When I saw the reaction to, and so as I looked at these things, I said, you know what? The only way to solve this is for there to be a paradigm shift. There's going to have to be a revolution, and I didn't mean a bloody one. I meant an electoral revolution. And then when I saw how people responded in September of 2008, John, to the bailouts, to the TARP plan, when I saw how the grassroots people rose up it must have shocked the members of Congress, the vehemence that came from the electorate. I said at that moment, I said, the revolution has started. Now tell us what happened after that.
Well, you know, I think a lot of folks gave folks in Washington some leeway, saying, look, we're principally against this, but in our gut know it's wrong. But you're saying it's absolutely necessary. There were some protests and there was some backlash and folks were skeptical and there were sort of pork rallies and things like that that started taking place around the country, but nothing on as wide a scale as we would see later with the Tea Parties.
Right.
Eventually, I think that part of the reason is, and folks rightly point out, you didn't see these protests on this scale under President Bush, and I think that's because folks saw a self-proclaimed free market conservative saying, look, this is absolutely necessary to save the financial system. So they said, all right, look, we'll give you a little leeway. It doesn't sound right.
But there was, though, John, in September, as I said, in September of 2008, when President Bush was still there, there were plenty. That's one of the reasons why they didn't pass it the first time, was because of the reaction. It wasn't organized, but it was a groundswell from regular folks.
Oh, sure. But it didn't have, I don't think it had as widespread appeal as it would later have only a few months later.
And what's
interesting is I think that the reason being more and more folks said, look, we gave you some leeway here saying that this would help Main Street, but it actually practically didn't work. And philosophically, it isn't right. And I think when Rick Santelli got up and started talking about that in February of 2009.
On CNBC, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. He stood up and
he went on a rant, and it made history.
Rant heard around the world.
Yeah, yeah.
I heard about the moral hazard of it.
I actually was watching when he did that live, and the traders in behind him went nuts.
Exactly, and I think folks said, "Look, I've been sitting at home saying that I didn't think this was right. It's not very popular to stand up and say necessarily, especially as everyone's 401ks are tanking, and maybe you know a couple people in finance are telling you it's necessary to save their firm and what have you."
Right. How about all the small business owners who are trying to make payroll this Friday or just survive, you know?
Exactly. And he started talking about the moral hazard of it and called for a tea party. I think that sparked something in millions of Americans who are skeptical anyway.
And when we come back, John's going to talk to us about how this really got organized and how it got off the ground we're going to talk about some of the shots that they've taken from other people in the media. And what's the future of all this? And what does all this mean for America? And more importantly, what does it mean for your small business and my small business, 22? Right back after these messages with John O'Hara.
Across the vein of night, the cuts of path of searing light, burning like a beacon on the edges of...
The late, great Dan Fogelberg, ladies and gentlemen, bringing us back. That's The Nexus. That song is The Nexus. From the Innocent Age album. Check it out. It's outstanding. It's a double album. It's still a wonderful, wonderful album. And 17 Tell, I'm Jim Blasingame. I'm glad you're here. Hope you'll check out my website, smallbusinessadvocate.com, when you get a chance. And if you get a chance to, if you're on Twitter and you want to follow me there, I'm at Jim Blasingame. John O'Hara is our new friend and the author of A New American Tea Party. And John, when we went to the break, you were talking about... We were just leading up to the first Tea Party, which you were involved in, weren't you, in Washington D.C.?
Yes, sir.
Tell us about that.
And I got together and got involved and got the ball rolling back in February of last year.
So this was a response to Centelli's rant and talking about Tea Parties, and so that gave you the idea for the Tea Party. So you went to Washington and you held the first one, and then after that one, that was about a year ago, right?
Yeah, it was last year during the Conservative Political Action Conference. We knew there would be a lot of attention in D.C. and on sort of conservative and libertarian principles, and thought it would be timely within a week or two of Santelli's rant.
Isn't it important not to differentiate conservative, libertarian from Republican or Democrat? A lot of people think if you say conservative, you're thinking, you know, most of the Republicans. But tell us the difference.
You know, I think even those labels I would be careful about, I guess. I think one of the important things that this movement shows is that particularly party labels of Republican and Democrat, and you touched on this earlier in the segment, you can't trust those labels. Just because someone says they're a Republican doesn't mean they're going to be for limited government.
Right.
And many times, it's just about getting the beast to work for them once they get in office. And people may go in with the best of causes, but what they end up doing is expanding a bureaucracy just in different ways.
Tell us what the main platform, main planks are in the Tea Party platform.
I think the main thing that really runs through everybody that's involved in it is about the role of government and that the government is doing too much. So it's not just about taxes; it's about general overreach of the government, whether it's health care, whether it's cap and trade, and of course bailouts and handouts are a huge part of it. And I think that secondly, it's really more broadly, really represents a civic reawakening. It's about those core principles, but it's also just about paying attention to what's going on. I think people have woken up from a deep slumber and realized you can't just send politicians to your state capitol or to Washington, D.C. and wash your hands
and expect them to do the right thing. But, John, here's the thing. When I hear you saying what you just said, I keep thinking of that great philosopher, Pogo the Possum, who looked into the swamp and he said, "I have seen the enemy and he is us." Americans, the electorate, we are the enemy. We're the cause of all this because we're the ones who are more likely to say, when we see something we don't like, we're more likely to say, why doesn't somebody do something about this? And the first thing that when a politician hears us saying that, they say, oh my goodness, if I don't do something about this, I won't get reelected, because that's what they want. So I'm going to pass a law that does something about that. And little bitty baby steps by baby steps, we wind up with the mess we've got right now. Am I correct about that?
Absolutely. And I think
so. Don't we have to heal? We have to heal ourselves, don't we?
We do. We have to realize that we can't look to government for the solutions. And if there's one thing that particularly the Obama administration has shown is that the false hope of hope and change offered by politicians is just that. It's false. It's false hope. You can't. The government doesn't create jobs. The government cannot and should not be solving everybody's problems.
Yeah. Well, that's true, but you can, you know, and I'm very quick to be a detractor of President Obama's, I think his feckless attempts to create jobs, but the truth is that you know, you can turn it right around on the other party too. I mean, you know, the part of the reason we're in this condition right now is, you know, some of the things that happened on both of their watches.
Oh, absolutely. I kick off the book, as I was saying earlier, by talking about how I think in many ways the Republican Party lost its way, started the bailouts, of course, under Bush, and really lost the mantle, dropped the mantle of fiscal responsibility and limited government.
One of the things that I've been, as I observed the Tea Parties and their behavior and their reaction to people, it's been very interesting to me to see the people who have been detractors of the movement. And I say that you can be a detractor of the Tea Parties if you want to, but because it's a free country, but if you're a politician, you do that at your own peril. What do you think, John?
Oh, absolutely. I think that it's so transparent that certain individuals are why they're against the Tea Party movement, and they've tried to slander it in any way possible. And in the book, I talk about the political and media backlash, everyone from the president to major network anchors
right.
Has tried to marginalize it from the very beginning.
But this is, I mean, I know people, I know presidents of companies, small business owners from all over the country, people who've traveled at their own expense to attend these things. This is real America represented here, isn't it?
It is, and you hit the nail on the head when you said that politicians ignore it at their peril. I mean, the Tea Party movement has better favorability ratings than either political party, and when political elites get up there and start trashing Americans who are just exercising their First Amendment rights, people see through that, and it's despicable.
When we come back, I'm going to ask John, what's the next step for the Tea Party? Are there going to be candidates? Are they going to be running people for elections? Are they going to be influencing the other party elections? What's the future? Right after these messages, stay with us. Little Steely Dan bringing us back 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame. Thanks very much for staying with me. My pleasure to continue to be with you. Visiting with our new friend, John O'Hara. John M. O'Hara is the name on the book, A New American Tea Party. He's one of the guys who got the first Tea Party going in Washington, D.C. about a year ago, and now he's written a book about it. There's a foreword by Michelle Malkin. Many of you know who she is, the author of Culture of Corruption. John, tell us where we can find the book and how we can find you online.
You can actually find my website and the book at anewamericanteaparty.com.
All right, just the title of the book.
Local bookstores and Amazon.
All right, it's available on Kindle too, right?
Yes, sir.
All right, so check that out, John. When the election happened in Massachusetts, a lot of people said this was a shot across the bow of the president and his administration and the Democrat leaders. I said that was wrong. I said it was a shot across the bow of the political class, regardless of party. What do you think?
I think it's a little bit of both, actually. I think that the fact that even folks in my home state, actually, of Massachusetts said, look, government's reaching too far with Obamacare. I mean, it was really a referendum on Obamacare. But to your point on the political class, I think absolutely. It really summed up the attitude that we saw most clearly in the August town halls, which is many of these politicians they can barely stand to be around their constituents.
Yeah, and vice versa.
And, Well, yeah. Well, the difference is they work for us.
That's we know that, but they don't know that.
Right. Well, they're starting to realize that. And I think one of the big things that happened in Massachusetts is that Democrats said, look, this is Teddy Kennedy's seat. We've got this in the bag. We don't need to get out there and earn those votes one vote at a time.
Right.
And I think the voters in Massachusetts rightfully resented that and said, hey, that's the way it's going to be.
The Democrat candidate even said one time, she was quoted as saying, what do you want me to do, stand out in the cold and shake hands?
Right.
Or something like that.
and that did not help.
No.
So, yeah, I think you saw this. It really hammered home that even in Massachusetts, people said, look, you need to get out there and earn that vote. You're not just going to get it because of the title Democrat.
You know, John, we've got registered Republicans, registered Democrats, and we have people who call themselves independents. I think in the future, we're going to have more and more people who are going to consider themselves to be registered independents. What do you think?
You know, I think that's quite possible. And the Tea Party movement has better favorability ratings than either party. Massachusetts actually is a great example. The biggest block of voters, I think it's 51-52%, are registered independents, actually, neither Democrats nor Republicans. I think more and more people are rejecting those party labels because they don't always sum up a coherent worldview.
Does that make your Tea Party, though, does that make your Tea Party want to more likely to have candidates of its own, or just to keep building the momentum of the ideas of a Tea Party without the structure?
There's not a one size fits all situation. You know, there might be folks, particularly maybe on the local or state level, that find it's feasible to run under a new banner. But I think 9 times out of 10, it's going to be about working within the two major political parties to make sure that you get principled politicians into office, and then once they're in office, make sure they're held accountable.
I'm not sure that's going to be enough, though, John. I'm not sure that there's not going to have to. I mean, I hope that we keep the momentum going on this. I hope you and the folks who do what you do, I hope you keep the momentum going on this, because this doesn't need to be in a flash in the pan, John. We've got a lot of heavy lifting to do to get to reclaim this country and get it back on the track of that where it should be in terms of, as you said earlier, limited government, people being more in control of their lives, more liberty, more opportunity for entrepreneurs, lower taxes, you know, that kind of thing. Those are the things that I want myself, John, and I believe in. And so if we're going to move in that direction and away from the statism that I think we're getting right now, it's going to take a lot of work. We got a long way to go.
Absolutely. And I think the important thing to stress is it's not just about getting folks in office that talk the talk. You need to make sure they walk the walk once they are in office. You know,
right.
I think the movement has successfully sort of organically made some smart political decisions. Scott Brown is not perfect.
Right.
They got behind him because on the issue of the day, he was going to stop Obamacare.
Right. We need more.
Many activists.
We need more Scott Brown elections, folks. We sure do. Hey, John, congratulations on the book. Thanks for being here. Good job.
Thanks so much for having me.
A New American Tea Party, ladies and gentlemen, is the book. Check it out. I got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blasingame. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.